Welcome to another broadcast of Studying the Scriptures. I'm your host, Dr. Todd Baker, Director of Berit Hadashah Ministries in Dallas, Texas. Last time we were with you, we were deeply engaged in our study entitled The Marvelous Messiah, a systematic examination of all the major messianic prophecies of the Bible, a series that is quite extensive because of the sheer magnitude and volume of this subject of study, and that would be the Messiah, who is the crown jewel of biblical revelation and the pinnacle of Bible prophecy. Last time we were looking at prophecies dealing with the birthplace of Messiah. Again, messianic prophecy is the litmus test, the infallible criteria for determining the identity of the Messiah, and the simple function for prophecy that God gave to Israel and through them to the rest of the world is that whoever comes and fulfills these involved and specific prophecies about the Messiah would be the Messiah. It's a case of simple historical deduction. If the person who claims to be the Messiah truly is the Messiah foretold through Moses and the prophets, given in the Tanakh, or what we call the Old Testament, then he will fulfill these prophecies. And hopefully you have seen thus far, and it's obvious to anyone who has an open mind, that there is only one candidate who fits the bill. And that person is Jesus of Nazareth. His genealogy lines up with the Messiah's genealogy. And we have also discovered that the manner of his birth was exactly fulfilled for the supernatural way in which the Messiah would be born, that is, born by a virgin. And now we are discovering that the place the Messiah would be born, the place he would start his ministry, again fits with the events surrounding the birth of Jesus. And last time we were looking at where his ministry would begin. Isaiah 9, 1 and 2 tells us that the Messiah's ministry would begin in Galilee of the Gentiles, the area or region in and around the Lake of Galilee, where the tribes, Zebulun and Naphtali, of the 12 tribes of Israel, were given land to live in by God. And this is exactly where Jesus arose to begin his ministry, as Matthew 4, verses 12 through 16 tells us. And Matthew quotes Isaiah 9, 1 and 2, and correlates it with the historical fact that that is where Jesus also began his ministry. So again, the obvious point here is that Isaiah the prophet foretold that the light of Messiah would first shine in Galilee. And 700 years after Isaiah gave this prophecy, Jesus started his ministry in the exact area where Isaiah predicted Messiah would come. His ministry would dawn as a light dispelling the darkness in Galilee. And that's exactly what we have with the time of Jesus' ministry. Now, it's called Galilee of the Gentiles because Nazareth and the area closely surrounding it was the center of the Roman garrison, where the Romans conducted control over the northern regions of Galilee. Their main garrison was in Nazareth. So it was an area that had many Jews, but also Gentiles. This was the area, if you remember, where the Assyrians dispossessed and depopulated the Jews from there and took them into exile in Assyria, repopulated the area with Gentile colonialists. So their descendants were living in Galilee at this time as well. So it was a mixed multitude of Jews and Gentiles. Hence the name Galilee of the Gentiles in Matthew 4:15. So we see then that the Lord's ministry did indeed begin in Galilee, just as it was foretold. Another place where the Messiah would arise was that he would come forth from Bethlehem. Micah 5:2 tells us, "But as for you, Bethlehem Ephrata, though you be the thousands among the cities of Judah, yet from you one will go forth from me, who is to be ruler in all Israel. His goings forth are from long ago, from everlasting." Now let's look at this prophecy closely here, and we'll see again that, and we've touched on this prophecy, so we've mentioned it in passing several times during our lengthy study of Messianic prophecy. Now let's look at it more closely as it relates to the place and time of the birth of the Messiah, specifically the place. Notice here that the Messiah would come out of Bethlehem, a very small, tiny village, outranked in population by the other numerous cities and villages of Judah. Yet, from this small town where once King David was born and raised, out of this town, would come the ruler in Israel. And though his human origins would be from Bethlehem, his existence, he existed prior to his coming out of Bethlehem. Yes, he existed from eternity. That's an amazing prophecy. So when we add the fact that the Messiah's birth would be a supernatural birth, conception and birth from a virgin, add to that this prophecy, we clearly see now that the Messiah would not only be human, but he would be eternal. He would exist from eternity. And clearly that denotes that Messiah would be divine in nature. Micah was a contemporary of Isaiah. He prophesied during the same time Isaiah prophesied, yet his prophecies were given in a different part of Judea. Yet, here in Micah 5:2, we discover that the birth of Messiah, where, I should say, the birth of Messiah is to take place, he would be born not in Jerusalem, not in Nazareth, or in any other city in Israel. He would be born in Bethlehem. The one who would come forth from Bethlehem, who would be ruler in Israel, he would exist before his birth in Bethlehem, because Micah tells us that though he has a human origin, he would exist from long ago. Literally, the Hebrew reads, from the days of eternity. It's interesting to note here that the phrase in Hebrew, from old, from everlasting, literally reads, from the days of eternity. And in Hebrew, that is the strongest, these words are the strongest ever used for eternity past. Literally, the Hebrew, from the days of eternity, literally it reads in the Hebrew, Mememi Olam, Mememi Olam. And this phrase is found in Psalm 92 and Psalm 8, 22 and 23. I refer to these two passages where from everlasting or Mimi Olam, as found in Micah 2, these two other passages from the Psalms and Proverbs show and underscore that the Messiah himself would exist from eternity past, thus making him God himself, the eternal God. Psalm 90, verse 2, says this: from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Mimi Olam. So God's existence or his nature is eternal. That is, it is without beginning or end. It's free. Free from all time constraint, succession, or any finite limitations to time. God is eternal. He exists. That's why he says, I am that I am. He always exists. He will exist. He does exist. And to say here that this Messiah, though his human origin would begin in Bethlehem, but prior to that he existed from eternity, makes it obvious that this ruler in Israel, this Messiah, to come out of Bethlehem would be the eternal God. And not to stray off our subject too much, but Yeshua did claim to be the eternal, self-existent God, the I Am. When God said to Moses from the burning bush, I am that I am, he was stating to Moses that I am eternally self-existent, no beginning, no end. And the only way you can properly describe that is by saying, I am. Remember in John 8:58-59, Jesus told his detractors, he said to them, before Abraham existed, I am. The same divine title of self-existence that God used, revealing that to Moses from the burning bush, is the same exact title Jesus claimed for himself in John 8. And this was anticipated and foretold by Micah when he said that the ruler would come forth from Bethlehem, that he indeed existed from the days of eternity. Mimi Olam. And then in Proverbs 8, this same fact is stated again. In Proverbs 8, we have divine wisdom speaking and personified as a living person. Proverbs 8, 22 and 23. We read here, this is wisdom, divine wisdom speaking, personified as a person. He claims too that he was with God and existed with him from eternity past. Verse 22 of Proverbs 8. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his way. Before his works of old, I have been established from everlasting. In the beginning, before there was ever an earth. Now remember, the New Testament says that Jesus is the incarnate wisdom of God. And here we have him speaking in Proverbs 8. Before he was born in Bethlehem, he said, I was with God and existed with him from eternity. Agreeing and reinforcing the prophecy of Micah 5:2, that though the human Messiah would be born in Bethlehem, his existence as God was from eternity past. And so Micah 5:2 tells us that though the Messiah was to be a human being born at some specific point in place and time, that is Bethlehem, yet before he was born, he existed as God from eternity past. And therefore the Messiah would have to be divine. He would have to be divine. Now we have the Holy Spirit officially and formally confirming this prophecy fulfilled with the birth of Jesus in Matthew chapter 2. When Herod inquired about this new star that appeared in the heavens, and the wise men came who had seen this star, they knew of the prophecy. In Numbers 23, I believe, it stated that the star of Jacob would arise, and that would herald the coming of Messiah. Well, they went to King Herod, assuming that he was amenable to this, asking him, "Where is he that is born King of the Jews?" And when Herod heard this, he was troubled. Herod was a homicidal and paranoid monarch. He killed many of his close retinue, and he killed members of his family, suspecting them of plotting to overthrow them. And so now he was contemplating killing this infant who was proclaimed to be the Messiah, confirmed by this new star that appeared in the heavens. So Herod inquired of the scribes, the Jewish authorities of the law, who were well versed in messianic prophecy. So Herod asked them, in Matthew 2:4 we are told, he asked them, "Where was the Messiah to be born?" And they, knowing Micah 5:1-2, told him Bethlehem, and they quote the prophecy in verse 6 of Matthew 2. "But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you shall come a ruler who shall shepherd my people Israel." And so this is exactly what happened with the birth of Jesus. He was born of the Virgin Mary in Bethlehem. And so another prophecy as to the birthplace of Messiah was fulfilled to the letter when Jesus was born in Bethlehem. Now another prophecy giving us another location where the Messiah would come is also found in Matthew. Matthew 2:23. Well, actually, before we go to that prophecy, there's another one here. Matthew chapter 2 is replete with prophecies of the Messiah given and the fulfillment of them with the birth and arrival of Jesus the Messiah. Another prophecy we find is in Hosea 11:1. There God says of Israel, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." Now originally, the prophet Hosea is alluding there to the Exodus, when the children of Israel were led out of Egypt by the strong and supernatural power the Lord gave Moses. And yet, this serves as a type of the Messiah's leaving Egypt, because the Messiah and Israel are united. Jesus is the epitome of what Israel should be before God. He is, in a sense, the true Israel of God. However, in stating that, that does not mean that unbelieving Israel today, the Jewish people, have been replaced by Jesus or by the church. He is simply the model or the prototype that the Jewish people are to emulate and follow. And that doesn't mean, of course, that Jesus came merely to set an example for people to follow. Because Jesus was perfect, we are imperfect. The point here is that He is the true Israel par excellence. And so His departure from Egypt occurred when Herod the Great's death happened, and Joseph and Mary felt safe to bring the infant Jesus back into Israel. Matthew 2:14. "When he arose," this is talking about Joseph, "he took the young child and his mother by night and departed for Egypt, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the Lord through the prophet. Now he quotes Hosea 11:1 specifically, saying, out of Egypt I have called my son. So Israel's exodus from Egypt is a type, an analogy, a foreshadowing of the Messiah's exodus from Egypt after the danger of King Herod's murderous reach was terminated upon the evil king's death. And so here we have prophecies now stating that the Messiah would arise in Galilee and bring his divine presence, spoken of as light, to the darkened condition of the inhabitants there. We have another prophecy stating that the Messiah would be, or would come out of Bethlehem. And yet we have another prophecy by way of analogy stating that God's Son would be called and therefore come out of Egypt. So you got three different messianic prophecies stating where the Messiah would come from. And another prophecy as to the place of Messiah's origin again is found in Matthew 2:23. When the Holy Family, Jesus, Mary, with Jesus, returned to Israel from Egypt, they settled in a place, in a town, in the northern region of Galilee called Nazareth. Verse 23, speaking again of Joseph, and he came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophets, he shall be called a Nazarene. Now, critics of the Bible will use this verse, particularly those who are part of the anti-Yeshua or anti-Jesus Jewish organizations. They will take this verse and say, see, Matthew didn't even know his own Bible because he's saying here that the prophet said the Messiah would be called a Nazarene. Now, while it is true that there is no explicit prophecy given in the Old Testament stating the Messiah will be called a Nazarene, that's not what Matthew is attempting to point out here. This prophecy that the Messiah would be called a Nazarene is based upon the very root word of Nazarit, or Nazareth, which means branch. Nazarene means of the branch. And that Hebrew word carries with it something that is lowly, despised, or detestable. Something that is lowly, despised, or detestable. And so, let's get deeper into this prophecy in Matthew 2, stating the Messiah will be called a Nazarene. Why did he say here that the prophets said Messiah would be called a Nazarene when there is no explicit prophecy stating that? Well, even though there's not a prophecy in the Old Testament that directly says Messiah would be called a Nazarene, the word or the concept for Nazareth, which means branch, root, and so forth, because the Hebrew word for branch is netzer, which has consonants like those in the word Nazarene, these convey the fact that the Messiah would be lowly, despised, and have an unimportant beginning. And so Matthew used the plural prophets here in relation to the prophecy, he shall be called a Nazarene, based not on the idea of a specific prophecy, but rather based on the idea that the despised and lowly one, that those prophecies telling us about Messiah being despised and lonely, like a netzer, like a branch, certainly describe the Messiah's despised character. And this concept clearly fits several prophecies about the Messiah in the Old Testament, that he himself would be called Netzer, the branch. Nazarene means the despised one. See the connection? Perhaps also Matthew was recalling what it says about the Messiah in Isaiah 11:1, where he is called the branch who will spring forth or sprout from an ignoble and lowly origin. So that's how we have to read this. Not as if it were some direct prophecy that Matthew made a mistake about, because it's not found among the Old Testament prophets, but rather the Messiah would be called a Nazarene based upon the fact that he would be despised, rejected, and come from a lowly origin, like a branch, which is common, ordinary, ignored, and overlooked. So that is what he's saying here. Nazarene can also point to one who is separated unto God. Remember the Nazarite vow that one could take in Israel as a sign of complete devotion to God. Number 6, verses 1 through 21. Nazarite has a similar sounding phrase when spoken with Nazarite. And Jesus was completely devoted to God, like or even more than the Nazarite. So, when you factor these things together, this is what Matthew means. He means that the Messiah is the despised one who would be separated and utterly devoted to God. And in that sense, he was Netzer, the separated one, or the Nazarene. Well, moving on. We see now that the Messiah would come forth from Bethlehem. His glorious presence would be manifested in Galilee. He would settle down in Nazareth and be called the Nazarene. And he would escape or leave from Egypt. Are these prophecies giving us different locations and places for Messiah's advent, living, and the beginning of his ministry? Are these places mentioned? Galilee, Nazareth, Bethlehem, and Egypt. Are these prophecies contradictory of him? Not at all. When you factor in that the specific person came and unlocked the puzzle by the course of events in his divinely ordained birth and life. And they, of course, point to Jesus of Nazareth. He was born in Bethlehem, as Micah 5:1 and 2 tells us. And soon after, he was taken into Egypt by Joseph and Mary. Shortly thereafter, the Lord called him back to Israel. And after the death of the murderous and blasphemous King Herod. And when Joseph and Mary with Jesus came back to Israel, they settled in Nazareth, where the Lord was reared. And because he lived most of his early life in Nazareth, Jesus was called not Jesus the Bethlehemite, not Jesus from Egypt, but Jesus of Nazareth. He was a Nazarene. His birth was from Bethlehem, yet because he lived in Nazareth for so much of his life, Jesus truly was a Nazarene, a separated one, by living in Galilee. So, the historical record of the life of Jesus, as inerrantly documented and recorded, shows us that he fulfilled all of these prophecies about the birth and coming of Messiah. More on the marvelous Messiah next time. Until then, Shalom Yeshua HaMashiach Aleichem. May the peace of Jesus the Messiah be with you.